Hello and welcome to the Forest of Pop Culture Fae. I am Miller C. Lashbrook, a teacher and writer, and I am your fairy host on your journey through this forest of pop culture. This week on Pop Culture Fae, I will be talking about why I love Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Hope you enjoy. Alrighty, before we get into the main topic for this week, I'm going to talk what I have been consuming this week. In books, I finished reading the Star Wars novel, The Living Force, by John Jackson Miller. It's the most recent Star Wars novel published. I really enjoyed this. It was not perfect, but it took place in an era of Star Wars I really like. Gave me a new look at some characters I didn't know a lot about and kind of fleshed out some information around the prequel era. Give you a brief kind of overview of what the book is about. The book takes place about a year before The Phantom Menace and follows the Jedi Council, all 12 members, as they basically have a anniversary celebration of this project that was done on a planet in the Outer Rim that has kind of, the project has kind of fallen to the wayside, and they're trying to revitalize it and do some good, because Qui-Gon basically challenged the council to focus more on individual people and less on the big picture. I really enjoyed this. It definitely made me like a lot of the council members more than I did before. And it takes place during that prequels era, and specifically the time right before and right after Phantom Menace. We still don't have a lot in canon during that time period, so I'm always happy to get stuff during that. If you would like to check out my full written review, I have one up on my blog that was posted this week after I finished the book. And so you can check that out there. I also started this week reading the second of Rick Riordan's Trials of Apollo series, The Dark Prophecy. So that is my current read right now. In comics, I continued reading Ms. Marvel Volume 2. And in TV, I mean, we're getting so much good TV right now. Shogun had its penultimate episode, which was intense, emotional, and I have no idea how things are going to end next week with this coming week with the finale. I've also been continuing watching Breaking Bad when there's no like new TV to watch. X-Men 97 had its sixth episode this week. I really enjoyed the episode this week. It was Life Death Part 2, so continuing the Storm storyline. But we also got to check in with another character who we haven't seen in X-Men 97 at all yet, which was really cool, showed a side of the Marvel Universe that is pretty important to X-Men comics, but the MCU hasn't really been able to touch. So that was really cool. Bad Batch had a new episode this week, a pretty solid episode, definitely building that tension. The episode this week, like the last, say, 10 minutes of like 5-10 minutes of the episode was just so well structured to build that tension going into these final two episodes. That was really great. I rewatched Mandalorian season 3 this week, and I don't usually talk about reality TV on here, even though I watch some reality TV, but the current season of Survivor has been really solid. The episode this week in particular had a lot of great like strategy and gameplay going on between the players, with a tribal council meeting that kind of went off the rails. So I mean, if you like Survivor and haven't been watching the current season, I definitely recommend go on Paramount Plus, get caught up, because this has been a pretty good season. Similarly, but on the other side of things, I also watch Amazing Race, and this season has not been great. I've heard some murmurings online that this season was filmed during the pandemic, and so they weren't able to travel to a lot of places. A lot of the season that's airing right now has been just in South America and kind of bouncing around to different countries in South America, which is cool, right? Like, I love when The Amazing Race goes to kind of those places that you wouldn't normally think to go to on vacation, like the stereotypical places. But I think because it's been so isolated to one continent, it has felt there's been a sameness to a lot of the places they visited in terms of climate, in terms of look, aesthetic, right? And so the contestants this season, they're not bad, but they're not, there's only a couple teams that I like am really enjoying. And so the season's kind of dragging a little bit, but I like it because of the geography and history stuff that you learn on The Amazing Race. So I always still watch it for that. So yeah, that was what I was consuming this week. Now we're going to move into the main topic for this week, which is Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. So 2024, specifically this kind of spring 2024 season, has really become for me the season of the Star Wars rewatch. It kind of started earlier in the year, and sometimes my husband and I just want to have something that's familiar to kind of fall back on and watch. And we're not really sitcom people. I feel like for a lot of people, they use sitcoms to fill that void. So they'll rewatch like The Office or Friends or Big Bang Theory or what have you. But other than we do like some of the more modern, like mockumentary style sitcoms, like we like The Office and Parks and Rec and Modern Family and all that. But in terms of having a background rewatch, we usually fall to our movie franchises that we like. And so it felt like Star Wars, it was its turn for a nice rewatch. And so we've been making our way through a lot of the films, the shows, and rewatching them. And so that kind of turned into me revisiting Obi-Wan about a month ago on the podcast, and then revisiting Andor as well. And so now I'm going to talk about Rogue One, right? This movie came out before I was doing the podcast, so I thought it would be nice to talk about it here. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. And that explanation aside, let me just get into it. Rogue One is such a fantastic movie. It was the second movie that Disney made in the new Disney era. It was released in December of 2016. I remember going to the theater and seeing this by myself. It came out right in December, but before I had gone home from college for the holidays. And so I was like, well, I want to go see this movie, but I don't have anyone to go with me. I'm just going to go by myself. The movie is directed by Gareth Edwards, but infamously, his cut of the film was not the best and did not do well in test screenings. And so screenwriter Tony Gilroy basically had to come onto the film and script doctor the film, do work on the reshoots, and stitch the movie into what it ended up becoming. And that is why Tony Gilroy got the gig to make Andor, right? Andor is his kind of project to tell the story of how the rebellion got to where we see it in Rogue One. Rogue One is the first spinoff movie of Star Wars, so it has that kind of special thing about it. It is also the first Star Wars movie to not feature an opening crawl, and the first Star Wars movie to not be scored by John Williams. So it is definitely set aside in that regard. Touching on the score, though, Michael Giacchino of Pixar fame, right? Like, I feel like a lot of people know his Incredibles and Ratatouille scores and his Up score. But Michael Giacchino scored this movie. This was when he, for me as someone who likes listening to film scores, this score is when I kind of became a lot more aware of who he was, because I was like, who's doing this score that's not John Williams? And he knocks this score out of the park. It feels like Star Wars, but it also feels different and matches the movie thematically. He has some great leitmotifs in the film score in a very Williams-esque way. So he kind of gives different characters their own little themes. Jin's theme is a favorite of mine, and the Hope Suite is another track in the score that I really enjoy. And Giacchino has gone on to become one of my favorite modern composers. I mean, he's done the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies. He scored parts of Thor: Love and Thunder. He scored and directed the Werewolf by Night special for Disney, amongst many other things. His scores are fantastic. And of course, the Pixar ones that I mentioned are amazing too. But back to Rogue One. I remember going and seeing this in theaters and being just unsure of the idea of a spinoff movie. I mean, at this point, Disney had only made Force Awakens so far, which is solid, a really enjoyable movie. I really like The Force Awakens. But one movie did not set a pattern, right? And so a lot of, I think, the Star Wars fandom was kind of looking at Rogue One to see, okay, can Disney keep making hits for Star Wars? And I think Rogue One's, the answer was yes for that, right? I think the most amazing thing for me about this movie that just blew my mind on the first watch was, I mean, like, going into the movie, I knew this was going to explore part of the opening crawl of A New Hope, right? That it was going to show us this team that got the Death Star plans that Leia gives R2 at the beginning of A New Hope. I did not anticipate that this movie was going to dovetail into A New Hope. Like, obviously, story-wise, because of what this movie is about, right? It was going to lead into A New Hope in some way. But the fact that we have this whole third act action sequence on Scarif, which I'm going to come back to and talk about here in a moment. But we have this whole intense third act sequence. And then that builds and builds and builds to the plans getting off Scarif and getting to the rebels. And you're like, okay, the plans are going to get away. And that's going to be that. But then for this amazing Vader sequence, the Vader hallway sequence that it has become so famous from this movie, to happen, to then watch as those plans get passed from rebel to rebel, and passed along and then taken all the way to Leia. Like, just the fact of, like, her seeing her be given the plans, and then the Tantive IV leaving, you're like, oh, this is like literally right before the start of A New Hope. Like, it's going to lead right into it. I think that was one of the things that really blew my mind about this movie on the first watch. Also, cool, like, world building additions to Star Wars, like Vader's castle on Mustafar, the all the planets that are introduced here, Jedha as this Star Wars Jerusalem type city, which tragically gets destroyed, right? The addition to the canon that the Death Star is powered by kyber crystals, the same kind of crystals that lightsabers use. And then the addition that the Death Star could be partially used, right? Like, whichever script writer on the movie came up with that idea that they could only use one reactor and basically use the Death Star like a nuke. Instead of blowing up a whole planet, they could obliterate just a city. Like, and so they were able to show how scary the Death Star was in the film without breaking the established canon that Alderaan was the first planet to be blown up with the Death Star. Just, there's just so many things about this movie that I love. And then on top of all that cool lore, world building additions, the score, the ending, on top of all that, then you get to the movie itself, and the characters, the acting, the cinematography are all astounding, right? Like, the way that this movie is able to feel, it has the shine and gloss of The Force Awakens, like a modern Star Wars movie, but it also has the grime, the grit of the original trilogy. It somehow has both, and in like a really cool way. I mean, the whole cast of characters is amazing. Jyn and Cassian as kind of our main characters, if you will, are fantastic. I love that they have this subtle chemistry all throughout the movie, but also this tension, and that in their last moment, they decide to like just embrace each other. In their last moment, right? If you didn't know, I was going to share spoilers here. Sorry, the movie's been out for a while now, so for 8 years. So I figured it was fair game for spoilers. Baze Malbus and Chiwetel Emway are amazing. I ship them, and the way that they go out at the end of the movie in the third act battle is fantastic. Ben Mendelsohn is such a good villain in this movie. He's just the way that like Krennic is this different Imperial character than we'd really seen in live action before. And we even have like Tarkin in this movie to like get the contrast from, right? Tarkin is very much like stoic, calm, cool, and collected and calculated. But Krennic is constantly wearing his emotions like right on his little white sleeve, getting mad, getting frustrated. He's just such a great villain, such a great addition to like the Empire in Star Wars canon. And I mean, I haven't even mentioned all the cast here, right? We have Mads Mikkelsen, we have Alan Tudyk, Forest Whitaker, right? Like, this is an amazing cast that's been put together. I'll talk about Alan Tudyk here for a moment as K2SO. Easily, it became a favorite droid of mine in Star Wars. The dry sarcasm that he has in deadpan humor is fantastic. I routinely think about him saying, "I find that v answer vague and unconvincing." And just great voice acting on his part, and his chemistry with both Diego Luna as Cassian and Felicity Jones as Jyn Erso, it is awesome. Yeah, this movie, it starts and it goes, right? We have this kind of slow rumble at the beginning of the movie, like the drum, like almost like the building of a drum beat, right? With introducing all the different parts, all the characters, getting the Orson Krennic and Galen Erso backstory at the beginning, then establishing where Jyn is at, getting her to the rebellion, and all of that. But then once they get to Jedha, the movie is just going from there. And the movie doesn't really give you all that time, much time to breathe, right? We have the whole Jedha sequence, seeing how this city is being occupied by the Empire, then getting them to Saw Gerrera's base, and cutting to the Death Star, and them like having this party essentially of using one of the reactors for the first time, and like the calmness on the Death Star versus the horror of the destruction of Jedha from the characters in Saw Gerrera's base. That is an amazing sequence. Like Galen, his hologram giving this story at the same time as watching Jedha City be blown up. Such a great way to have exposition given while also building tension at the same time. Like, just really smart screenwriting. Then we have the whole Edu sequence, which, what a great choice to go from this kind of red clay sand desert planet to then go to this mountainous, rainy, dark nighttime setting to create that stark contrast. And then, like, Galen dying and the Jyn having to be the one to like deliver the message, and them realizing they need to go get the plans from Scarif, and then again thinking about the different settings and like creating these kind of distinct visuals for each act of the film, then getting Scarif in the third act. And Battle of Scarif, hands down to date, for me, is the best like battle sequence in Star Wars that's been done. I mean, the way that we cut between the ground level, like beachfront battle, and also what's going on in the Citadel, right? In the tower on the surface, and then also seeing the spaceship battle above, right, in orbit, and the way that we cut between all those, the way that they decided to use archive footage from the original trilogy of the cockpits of the X-wings and Y-wings to make it feel like the original trilogy. The different strategies that are used with like the Hammerhead Corvette shoving the Star Destroyer into the other one so that they could take out the force field around the planet, the The way that they need to like hook up the communications tower, and we have like sort of AT-ATs on the beach, and we have the stormtroopers, and we have the death troopers, right? All these different moments in the sequence, and then on top of that, we have Cassian, K2SO, and Jin inside the Citadel trying to get the plans. Just the whole third act of this film is just amazing from start to finish. I love this movie. If you've seen it and you like it too, but haven't rewatched it in a while, hopefully now you have a reason or a desire to go do that. It is definitely, I think I would say, my second favorite Star Wars movie after Revenge of the Sith. I know that a lot of Star Wars fans would be like, oh, Empire's not up there for you in the top two. Well, Empire is number three. Okay. This movie, seeing it in the theater, and like was just an amazing experience. And then every time I revisit this movie, I love it more and more. There's more to take away from it, more lore, more character work. It's just amazing. I really hope that with Andor season two, that we are able to then have this cool lead in of like seeing the rebellion build from where it is in Andor cult and to becoming the Rebel Alliance, so that we can lead into and connect with Rebels as well as lead into Rogue One. But yeah, those are my thoughts on Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Amazing movie. It is an S-tier movie for sure for me. Alrighty, thank you for joining me today as I rambled about how much I love Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. If you are listening and enjoying the podcast, make sure to subscribe on your podcasting platform of choice. And if you are really loving the podcast, dropping a five-star review would be awesome. Also, if you have a friend who would like the podcast, make sure to share it with them to help grow our little community here. Next week on the podcast, I'll be pausing the Star Wars rewatch, and I will be discussing the FX series Shogun as it will be finishing this week on Tuesday. I'm a little sad about that show is going to be over. Once again, I am Miller C. Lashbrook. You can find me on Twitter/X at Mill C. Lashbrook, on Instagram at Miller C. Lashbrook. And for more pop culture fae, you can head to my website, popculturefae.com, for blog posts and more content. Finally, I hope that you have a fantastic day and a wonderful week, and I hope to find you the next time you wander into the forest of pop culture fae.